Did you know that no matter what's going on in the world, you can still turn your great idea into a reality with Squarespace? It's true. That's an option that you have because they make it easier than ever to launch your passion project. Maybe you're showcasing your work. Maybe you're selling products or services. Maybe you just want to have a shingle on the internet, the place where everything happens in, 2020 or 21 or 22, any of the future years we'll be in. So head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code CRACKED to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also bringing back a friend from last week. Yeah, once again, my cat, his name is Watson, is joining us and saying hi because we are taping from home once again, as, basically all podcasts are right now, as they should be for safety. And once again, I am wishing you all the best health and safety and everything else, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, hang in there. And, right up top, I think it's very, very important, especially if you saw the title of the episode, to ground this episode in a very clear statement that the novel coronavirus, this COVID-19, is a huge piece of shit. It's just awful. It has no redeeming qualities, no positive elements. As I tape this intro on April 8th, The Guardian reports over 81,000 deaths from coronavirus worldwide. So it's for real, and it's not funny. It's something that we do take very seriously. It's also something that I have less expertise on than a journalist or a medical expert, so I don't think our show is built to provide you with the latest tips on getting through it, right? You have other resources for that, other ways to get that information, and I'm really glad you do. On today's episode of this show, we're going to do something that's much more in our wheelhouse, and we're going to explore what I would not call good news, because again, can't be clear enough about this, the virus is a huge piece of shit, hate it, but the virus has impacted all of the world's standard operating procedures, right? Many, many events and practices and other things have been shut down. And I think we are qualified to cover that because today's topic is stuff that's been canceled by coronavirus that can stay canceled. One more time, that is stuff that's been canceled by coronavirus that can stay canceled. Because every year or every 2 years, the world does a standard set of things. Some of those things are foolish or inefficient or just straight up bad, like they should not be happening. A pandemic is an insanely shitty way to interrupt anything. However, while we're here making a podcast and thinking about the world, why don't we think about whether there are certain institutions and practices and other things that maybe we should stop having around for reasons that would benefit everybody? We figure we can keep that light and be a comedic and enjoyable podcast without making light of an incredibly serious virus. And so that's the needle we're threading today. That's the way we're going about it. And I hope you enjoy it. And for threading that needle, I am joined remotely by two of my very favorite people, taping in separate locations in California. Adam Todd Brown is the host and creator and more of the Unpopular Opinion Podcast Network. He's also written for MTV, Playboy, and other fine places. Also, you heard him on this show just 2 weeks ago in one of the very last episodes that we taped in what's been called the before times. So now we get to hear from him in the now times. Very exciting. And then I'm also joined by Dan Hopper, who you've heard many times on this show. He's a great writer and comedian and more. You've seen him on Ranker and College Humor, Best Week Ever, The New Yorker. I am so grateful to both of them for making time in these insane times to just think creatively with me. I think we had a really nice time of it, and like I said last week, anytime we can, just brighten an hour for you or make the day a little better, I think that's great. And I think this is an interesting way to go about that without, completely shutting the world out either. So that's the setup for the episode. Let's get you into it. Please sit back or share your dog with me at Alex Schmitty on Twitter. I would like to see it. Last week I asked for cats. So many of you delivered, and there were one or two dogs, and why don't we do that this time? Dogs are great too. Watson likes all pets. He's very friendly. And either way, here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Adam Todd Brown and Dan Hopper. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. And in terms of these things that are now canceled, and we can probably just move on from going forward if possible. One of them that I think, Adam, you brought up initially is April Fool's Day. We skipped it. Fantastic.
Yeah, April Fool's Day seems to have been canceled this year, and rightly so. Like, if you're pulling an April Fool's prank in the middle of a pandemic, you are the hugest asshole in the world. And you know the people who did. I wonder how many people in the United States just shot off a text to their relatives that said, I have coronavirus. April Fool's. Like, you deserve it. I hope you got it from that text.
Google put out a statement that was like, due to the circumstances, we will not be doing our annual April Fool's prank this year. And you're just like, what person is like still organically enjoying the Google pranks in like 2020? They've been doing them for like 20 years. And it's like, oh, here's a new Google service on April 1st. Ah, just kidding. You know, like paper mail introduced in like, and it was like viral in 2006. And it was like, oh, Google's poking fun at itself. And that has been going on now every year for 15 years. I think we can probably phase that out.
But also imagine being that person who was like, man, this sucks, but at least that Google April Fool's Day prank is coming to add some much-needed levity to my life. And then that doesn't even happen. Oh. They could have pranked people from home.
It might have been fun in whatever, the 1890s, when you trick someone into, like, opening spring snakes or, like, you know, they look through binoculars and their eyes are black or whatever. But like in an era where just you're seeing the absolute worst news and worst takes and weirdest shit like every second of every day, every time you refresh Twitter, I don't think we need to like add more stuff to that.
Yeah, yeah. And they're always about being cruel. Like April Fool's Day pranks are never fun. We did a episode of our true crime podcast recently about April Fool's pranks, and the one that really stands out in the 80s, Saddam Hussein on three different occasions on April Fool's Day went in front of the people, and the first time he said, good news, the U.S. is going to lift sanctions against Iraq, and everyone was like, yay, and then they were like, April Fool's, just joking. So the poor people got to suffer for a few more years. And then, like, a year later, they were like, good news, your monthly rations are going to include chocolate, bananas, and Pepsi now. And people were like, yay! And they came out and said, April Fool's. And then they did that exact same prank the next year, also, on April Fool's Day. And this is why Saddam Hussein deserved to hang.
That's not how jokes work. It's like a plausible thing, too. You know, there's like, if you say something absurd and someone believes it, it's like on them a little bit. But those are all like reasonable things you might expect or hope for. And like, and so being like, oh, you idiot, you thought you were going to get a Pepsi is like, all right, like, yeah, I you're just lying. That's just lying. That's not a joke.
Yeah.
Comedy is one of the many things we should not put in the hands of the deranged. You know, like they're not good at any just relation to any other human, and especially that it really shines. And I think also with April Fools, like I hope, well, obviously we all hope everything is more normal in the future. But also I hope that next April 1st, 2021, like things are normal and people just remember that it was nice to get a break from that holiday, you know, like because I really don't have any like pranks that happen top of mind. I think people somehow really found some good taste and didn't do it. And maybe we can just keep that going and also improve the world.
My concern is corporate America is just going to be like, hey, it's April Fool's in July. Because they had probably all of these campaigns cooked up that they spent money coming up with. And they're just going to launch it on us in the summer. And there's nothing we'll be able to do because corporations rule this country.
Like everything else, it's been so, I don't know if Baroque is the right word, where it's like, it's just this like expected stupid dance every April 1st. It's like, there's going to be a new Princess Bride movie or something. Or like, you know, it's like this really half-assed promotional tool that like, there's a new Big Lebowski. Just kidding. Like that kind of thing where it's like not organically a prank. It's like some company that has like been doing market research for 9 months and like writing the most inoffensive copy and then releasing it as a press release. And then everyone like knows it's fake, but they have to cover it because they need content. And it's just like this. It's like so exhausting and like inorganic.
Yeah, I hope it dies forever. I'd be more than fine with that. It was genuinely nice to see everyone in the country just kind of collectively go, nope, not the time. Yeah. Fuck it. Mm-hmm. A rare moment of solidarity in this country.
With corporate America in general, I feel like a lot of these things we're looking at tie into that, like just standard promotions they do or events they do. And one of them, I know it didn't start corporate, Dan, you had picked out Comic-Con as something that is like tentatively on hold. We don't know if it's going to happen or not. They tweeted on April 1st in a non-prank way that they are monitoring things and figuring out whether we will be able to celebrate Comic-Con come July. But that's an event that has been happening for many, many years, and maybe we can stop.
It's one of those things that like I totally get the point of it. And also, if people go to Comic-Con and enjoy it, like I have no gripe with that. That's fine. People enjoy what you want to enjoy. But like, you know, there was a time where Star Trek comics, superheroes, that kind of thing, nerd culture, D&D, board games, whatever, was like way out of the mainstream. And pre-internet, it was very difficult to interact with the people or, you know, meet some of the deeper dive people or meet like-minded people who share your obsession with a pop culture phenomenon that might be defunct. Like, I understood the purpose of starting it. But now, with the internet, you can find most of that stuff every second of every day. Plus, that's also now, like, the most mainstream culture we have. Like, superhero stuff is everything. It's constant. There's no lack of information about it. There's no lack of other people to talk to it about. And so Comic-Con, for years, has been this, like... I mean, you know, there's artists and panels and other kind of things, but like it's really just a giant advertising machine for companies that don't really even need it. You know, it's just like Disney or whoever putting on a panel of a movie that's going to make $1 billion anyway, and then people can't even get into the panel to see it. You pay to go to Comic-Con, then you have to wait in a line, and like only so many people get in the line to see advertisements for a movie that everyone in the world is going to see in a month anyway. It's a very weird experience.
Yeah, I've never, ever been to Comic-Con. I can tell from the crowds that I wouldn't be into it. I like to be able to flee a situation really, really quickly. I don't get up front at concerts. It's total Sopranos rules for me when I'm out in public these days. So just the sheer amount of people there turns me off to Comic-Con.
I had to cover Comic-Con 1 year when I worked for VH1. And first of all of the information there gets tweeted out every second by every news outlet in the world. So me being there is completely pointless. Anyone being there is pointless. Like Entertainment Weekly would tweet out every sentence that everyone said in every panel the second they said it. So it was like, I'm not going to scoop anyone on this. And then second of all, it was like advertising. It was like PR stuff. It's like information they want to disseminate. So there's no reason to like cover it. It's everyone's going to know everything from Comic-Con the second it is revealed anyway, whether or not you're there. And then also the panels were like, it was like the movie The Expendables was like the flagship panel one night. Like That's not nerdy. That's not niche. It's a giant Hollywood movie filled with action stars that's going to do its box office whether or not a bunch of nerds get to interview the cast or not. Like, it's so far removed from the idea of like, oh, you like Star Trek or you like Monty Python? You can congregate with other nerds who you've never met who share this love of a thing. It's just like, what's Disney doing the month this happens to happen? Eh, whatever. Just throw it out there. And then also you couldn't get in any of the panels. Like, people wait in lines for hours, and like if it's full and people don't leave, like you don't get into the convention room. So you basically pay to walk around a floor and leave.
I'm glad you've been, because I have not. And it seems, for one thing, I just see all the news on Twitter, as you described, but also, like, 1 year I looked into, okay, what would go into attending Comic-Con? And the tips were not on how to be in all the right panels and stuff. The tips were on, like, okay, here's how to get into the city of San Diego that weekend at all, because it will be flooded with people. It will be too shut down. Visit sandiego.com says last year's San Diego Comic-Con got about 135,000 people into that one convention center there in San Diego, but also in the area. And, like, so they're shutting streets down, and the trains are full, and the highways are full, and it's, like, just completely snarling a city to do a big public commercial. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, I don't begrudge anyone who goes. Like, I have friends who love it. I mean, sure, it's a lot of money for San Diego, and, you know, good for them, whatever. And I'm sure there's probably artists who maybe get a table and get some exposure, but, like, I don't know, without knowing the specifics, I'll bet you probably have to, like, Comic-Con probably rips you off somehow. You probably have to pay a lot. And, you know, at this point, it's not like a showcase for indie artists. It's like a advertising for companies that 100% don't need it, basically.
I don't understand people who treat it like a thing you have to go to. I know so many people who are like, well, I mean, it's Comic-Con. I obviously have to go to Comic-Con. And it's like, I like music, but I don't have to go to Coachella every year. I, in fact, never have to go to Coachella. And I can still see all those bands live. I can still hear all their music. And it's the same thing with Comic-Con. It's like, it's almost like a status thing now where it's like, hey, I'm at Comic-Con. And it's like, yeah, you and 134,999 other people. Congrats.
Yeah. It's just such an odd thing to, like, crave exclusive news from a thing that, one, you're going to see online 2 seconds later no matter what, and two, it's, like, not a big deal. It's like, here's the new exclusive trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp. Or, you know, you're like, all right, it's, like, fine.
It's like, yeah, it's not LeBron James hitting a game-winning shot. You're not going to tell your grandkids 60 years from now that you were there when the new X-Men trailer premiered at Comic-Con. No one gives a shit.
It's going to be tweeted out by the official account the second it's revealed at Comic-Con anyway. So you spent, whatever, $150 to go into a room to see it. Like, it feels very, like, what is that word for, like, thing that used to have a purpose but now is just, like, going through the motions, kind of?
It's like if you see a horse and buggy. It's like, okay, Central Park, this is very cute. But, like, we don't need to rearrange all of society for a horse to pull a buggy again.
This kind of ties into another thing we're going to talk about. I don't want to transition us to the Olympics, but it's a thing where the spirit is correct, but, like, the bloating of it has made it not what we want anymore, kind of thing.
Yeah, I would love to transition to the Olympics. Let's talk about it. I like sports, and all three of us like sports, but the Tokyo 2020 Summer Olympics are right now postponed until 2021, and in general, the Olympics is, like, a really negative phenomenon for the place it happens, and it seems to be an overall negative phenomenon for the entire world, for freedom, democracy, just wealth being put in the right places. It's a pretty negative event, even though it is cloaked in a lot of positive things. So I think maybe we luck out and miss this Olympics completely. That would be great.
You're right that when the Olympics and the IOC come to town, things get really bad for poor people. The same thing with FIFA and the World Cup. Yeah. Like, the World Cup is a far bigger human rights crisis than the Olympics. But the way you fix that, and I've been saying this for years, just hold the Olympics in the same place every time. Hold the Olympics in Greece, where the Olympics started, a country that could probably use the income that would come from hosting the Olympics every 4 years. And that eliminates all of the fucking problems with the Olympics outside of, like, doping. Like, if you just put it in one place every 4 years instead of letting different cities host it, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
I think that's true, but I think that assumes that the cities and that the IOC don't have different priorities than, you know, fans and cities. Mayors and governors or whatever want to show off their city, and, like, it's a prestige thing and it's a branding of the city. And then it's also an excuse to, like, flood a lot of money into the city, into, like, different organizations to do construction projects that may or may not be necessary, and to, like, clean up slash gentrify certain areas of cities. And so there, I think there's a lot of people with conflicting agendas, those problems that Alex mentioned, I don't think the people who run the Olympics or the cities that are clamoring to get the Olympics view those as problems.
You know, no.
I think LA is like happy to gentrify an area of Inglewood and push poor people out and build a bunch of new condos and a new stadium or whatever. I mean, they're going to use the Rams stadium, but
that's why you don't let them move around. Like, eliminate that aspect of the Olympics. That thing where the IOC comes to town and fucking drives poor people out of the areas surrounding the stadiums they build. Just don't allow that. Like, the World Cup does the same thing. The World Cup that's about to happen should have been shut down years ago. Like, thousands of people have already died building the infrastructure for the next World Cup.
The 2022 Cup in Qatar there?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're both right, and Adam, that is a particularly good solution for a lot of the issues. I feel like it would almost need to be some kind of international city where they play it, or it's some kind of floating island, like Mortal Kombat or something. I don't know, some place separate from the rest of society where they could just put the games and then nobody's impacted.
Either
by
Greek
it.
Or Greece or a floating island of some sort.
yeah, I have a lot of realistic ideas.
It's down to two. The IOC is deciding between the final two. The volcano from You Only Live Twice or the nation of Greece. You could also do, March Madness and events like that, or like the Frozen Four NCAA hockey tournament. Like, they pick cities based on the infrastructure that's already there. You know, the cities that can accommodate that thing. And I guess cities sometimes make preemptively maybe do Olympic style gentrifying and stadium building to get those events. But still, the event, it's not like the event is like March Madness next year will be held in this city, and then they just like have to build seven stadiums from scratch in like some random town that six of them are going to be empty forever. And there's like a luge, and you know, like
the luge is so great though.
But yeah, I mean, the IOC and FIFA, like you said, are just, you want to watch the Olympics. I love the Olympics. I love the stories. I love the athletes. It's a lot of events that you don't see for 4 years, like gymnastics, figure skating. Like, I know there's world championships, but like really the Olympics is like the thing for those. You can't access it as a viewer without knowing that you're a puppet of this like weird cabal of like eight Central European dudes who all look like the villain in a movie that have diplomatic immunity, and they have to take like the cuffs off of them when they get arrested. That's every single guy on the Olympic committee. You know, the guy who gets arrested 25 minutes into the movie, and then he's just like, you know, you can't touch me, detective. And they have to let him go. Those are the people that are making these decisions. There's like 20 of them.
I still like the Olympics for the competitive aspect, and like, kids who don't play basketball, baseball, or football, also who play other sports, they need dreams too. Like, without the Olympics, I would argue we can also get rid of track and field, competitive swimming. Like, all of those sports can also go if there's building up to nothing. It would be like the NFL without a Super Bowl. Like, there's absolutely zero point. What are you going to do without the Olympics? You're going to become a professional figure skater and get on a Wheaties box? No. Like, you need the Olympics for that.
Yeah. And that's why I get that it's like, we can't just like, oh, the Olympics is corrupt, let's start a new thing. Like, no, the Olympics, the history and the gravity of it are very important. It just sucks that it's been intertwined with this like unmovable corruption.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like that's everything that everyone enjoys though. So I don't know. You just throw your hands up at some point. I mean, Alex, we've talked about how it's basically the same thing as stadium building in pro sports, you know, owners extorting cities for public money so they can build a stadium and profit off of it. And it sucks. But then you're like, I just like baseball. I just want to watch baseball. Like, what am I going to do? Not watch anything that corrupt billionaires are involved with? That's everything. Shit. Like,
and with the Olympics, we've got kind of two kinds of big problems. One of them is the crazy security measures or quote-unquote gentrifying or just bulldozing neighborhoods they'll do. With this 2020 Olympics, the cows are kind of already out of the barn to an extent, because We've got an article in The Guardian we will link that talks about how Japan passed a controversial law targeting conspiracies to commit terrorism and other serious crimes, despite a warning by the UN that it could be used to crack down on civil liberties. And their Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said, quote, "It's only 3 years until the Tokyo Olympics and Paralympics, and so I'd like to ratify the Treaty on Organized Crime as soon as possible so we can firmly cooperate with international society to prevent terrorism," end quote. But they ran through this law in 2017 just because 3 years from now there would be people like swimming competitively. It was a cover for doing a bunch of civil liberties stuff that the UN said was bad.
We need a pool, guys. We need a pool. So we need a three-year martial law crackdown. Like a Romanian gymnast can go on the horse. Like,
well, I'll go through them quick, but you keep seeing this phenomenon with basically every Olympics. In 2016 in Rio, the government there formed what are called police pacification units to just have an armed presence in every favela neighborhood, which are old, low-income neighborhoods in Rio, and then bulldoze them as many as possible and beat protesters for opposing it.
What was the Brazil troops, what were they called?
They were called police pacification units.
That's like the most like Paul Verhoeven, like on the nose, like dystopian shit. Like the betterment happiness officers. Just like, you know, just beating people left and right. Just like, ugh. There's no way that these giant construction projects are being done without like the organized crime of these respective countries being heavily involved, right?
Oh, no, yeah. Definitely not.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I think organized crime and sports are just two things that naturally kind of go together.
In the 2014 Winter Olympics, Russia used it to crack down on gay people for being people. The mayor of Sochi said that the city was gay-free, and then Putin told the world that gays are welcome at the Olympics if they leave children alone. And then Russia also invaded the country of Georgia a little bit as what they said was an anti-terror measure to protect the 2014 Winter Olympics. A few more crackdown things. London 2012 Olympics, they put together the biggest military buildup in London since World War II. Also, they had 39 miles of VIP Olympics lanes on roadways so nobody could drive anywhere. The Beijing 2008 Summer Olympics displaced 1.5 million people from their homes. And the 2004 Athens Olympics, the Greek government violated the Greek constitution to allow 50,000 special forces soldiers from Israel, the UK, and the US to like patrol Athens and just keep it under like military rule. So it's a weird time. But then also the other big problem is these Olympics cost too much money. And I'm sure part of it is organized crime, handouts to friends under the table, that kind of thing. Well, and with the Olympics costing quite a bit, Tokyo is already kind of a lost cause there because in December of 2019, people organizing it said it would cost $12.6 billion to do it. And then auditors came in and said, it's actually $9.6 billion more dollars than that, and you're not telling the truth totally about what it costs. You know, a loose $9.6 billion. Who cares?
Yeah, but those Olympics were a fucking fiasco, and they were maybe going to get canceled or delayed anyway. Japan has done a shockingly bad job.
It's probably what we were saying, right? It's probably like incentivized organized crime type stuff, right?
Yeah, they do have a pretty robust organized crime presence in Japan, so I could see that being the thing.
The true Olympic event was corruption. It's the voiceover of this documentary I'm working on. It's just that so far, but the rest will fall into place.
We can just get a few more takes of it now for the trailer, you know, like really, really lay it down.
Yeah. And then they don't really use VO in trailers much anymore, so it doesn't get used at all. But I'm just glad we did it, just to have some options.
You can turn your dream into a reality with Squarespace, because they make it easier than ever to launch your passion project. You know, maybe you're trying to start a new online business or showcase some online work or, you know, publish your writings about things that are going on with your photos or anything that's happening anywhere in the entire world. Squarespace is a perfect tool to put it online, put it on a website, and let people find it. With beautiful templates created by world-class designers and the ability to customize just about anything with a few clicks, you can easily make a beautiful website yourself. No crazy, intricate coding or anything going on. Just click and drag and tweak and arrange, and boom, you have built a website. Aren't you amazing? They also make buying domains simple, so you will get the help you need with Squarespace's 24/7 award-winning customer support, because Squarespace empowers millions of people to turn great ideas into something real. So head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code cracked to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/cracked, offer code cracked. There's also probably the most epic corrupt project is that 2014 Sochi Games, because in 2007, Vladimir Putin claimed it would cost $12 billion to put the game on. And it ended up costing $51 billion, which is the most a Winter Olympics had ever cost by a whole lot. There was also one project where they built just a very long road between things that didn't have a road yet. And people looked at what it would have cost to do like a not corrupt construction project if you used caviar instead of asphalt to build the road. And it would have been cheaper than the corrupt asphalt version that they ended up building. So we'll link about that.
It would have been funny if Putin followed that story up by paving that road with caviar. Like, hey, you wanted it, fuck faces. Here you go.
The caviar road that we thought was going to cost $50 billion has ended up costing $900 trillion. So again, slightly off.
But on the bright side, bananas and Pepsi in your rations this month.
This time... I can't judge too much, though, because sometimes you go out and you're like, I'm just going to have one drink, and then you have like four or five drinks and you spend $50 when you thought you'd spend like $10. So whatever, I can see spending $50 billion instead of 12. Like, it can happen to any of us. Like, whatever, you had a bad night. You're having fun. You already spent $12 billion and you're still out and you don't see your friends that often. It's just like, fuck it, $50 billion, why not?
Because also, the other weird thing is, it seems like, and it's just an accident of timing, but this pandemic that has shut down the 2020 games and pushed them to 2021 has dovetailed with the world kind of figuring out that Olympics cost too much money to put on. Like, if you bring it to your city, it'll be a massive money pit and a whole problem. When they were bidding for the 2024 Olympics, five cities were initially in on it, but Budapest and Hamburg and Rome all pulled out because of pressure from local people saying there's way too much money. And then from there, the IOC went ahead and gave 2024 and 2028 to the two cities that were left. And the scuttlebutt is they figured nobody's going to want to bid for these anymore. So we just need to lock in two right now and hurry up. And also with the 2022 Winter Olympics, they ended up in Beijing, and partly because they had five bidders there. And Munich, a group of Swiss cities, and Krakow, Poland all pulled out, leaving only Beijing and Almaty, Kazakhstan bidding. And then they picked Beijing just because Kazakhstan is like kind of a dictatorship and not the best choice. So it seems like the Olympics, like just at the same time as this pandemic happened, is also kind of out of host cities. Like, it's going to be really hard to find any places that want to do it going forward.
Well, LA's locked in, though, yep. As of now.
That's going to be such a fiasco.
People have been fighting it. People are still fighting it. There has to be a breaking point where even like cities that want to show off their prestige are just like, this makes no sense at all. And there's too much political pressure on everyone. Maybe it will just be in dictatorships from now on.
Yeah.
Because that's part of people's thinking on 2022 coming down to China and Kazakhstan, as it was two governments that don't need to listen to popular pressure to not do it. And maybe just going forward, it'll be in like countries where the just one leader can be like, I would like an Olympics, because they already were like, I would like a weird palace with a big statue. You know, it'll be that kind of thing.
2026 Winter Olympics, Dubai. Let's do it. Can make stuff cold indoors.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Another thing we've got here, and Adam, we picked this out, is just the practice of going to movie theaters, right? Right now, people aren't doing it. And it's good that people aren't doing it, but also, you know, maybe for ecological reasons and other reasons, we move on from it.
Yeah, I mean, the environmental stuff, like streaming movies is bad too. Like, movies are just bad for the environment, but I mean, like, fuck you, environment. We're going to have movies.
Not Fern Gully. That was a net positive.
That's true. and The Happening also. That was a good movie for the environment. Environment fighting back.
In the birds win. I think there's a lot of good ones here.
Yeah. But at least you don't have to drive to stream a movie. Unless you're sneaking in your own snacks, there's a lot of waste involved. Or if you're going to watch a movie and not getting snacks, like an absolute fucking psychopath, then there's, you know, you're adding all of that extra waste to the environment. And it's just, it feels like a fiscally irresponsible way to watch a movie. Like, you know who I bet doesn't go to movie theaters? Rich people. Billionaires, I bet, never go to movie theaters because that is a horribly irresponsible way to spend your money. Even with something like AMC A-List, which I subscribe to, like, in theory, you get 12 movies a month for $24, which is a decent deal if you have the free time to go to the movies three times a week. And there are three movies every week that you want to see, which rarely happens unless you're like a real fucking power user. And even then, you're going to spend extra money when you go. And is there a more vulnerable place to be in society right now than a movie theater? You're not safe from a pandemic. Like, it would have been the worst place to be like March 10th because we didn't realize we should be scrubbing those down like hospital rooms at that point. A mass shooting? Terrible place to be if a mass shooting breaks out. I don't know. I feel like I'm over it.
Cost-wise, you picked out that AMC service. It's at its most expensive, $24 a month for all those movies, which is also you could get two or three streaming services for that amount of money and just have all of the entertainment that's ever been made, more or less.
Yeah, that's just a couple dollars less than what I pay for Netflix and Hulu combined. And that's without ads. It seems like a great deal because movies are a terrible deal. And we've learned from this pandemic that movie theaters can just throw that shit up on streaming services and let you still pay more for it to see it early if you want.
See, I'm kind of a hypocrite on this one because I feel like my first instinct when I saw that was like, no, like, movies are meant to be experienced in a theater on a big screen with a projection with certain surround sound and certain specifications on the projector, and you're watching it with a crowd and it's a communal experience. But I would say 98% of the movies I see, I watch at home and have been spending the whole pandemic watching movies on iTunes on my computer in headphones, not even on my TV. I have a TV, I have an Apple TV. I'm still just like watching it on my computer because I'm like, whatever, this is fine and this is easy. So I feel like I'm a hypocrite against my own artistic argument.
That experience, thanks to technology, is a thing you can replicate in your home for relatively cheap in a lot of ways. Like just a really basic TV and a pair of Bluetooth headphones. And you're at the movies, baby. Shut the blinds, turn the lights down. You're going to get all of that same like surround sound type experience that you would get in a movie theater without sitting in a chair that 75 people have sat in before you since the last time it was cleaned.
If movie theaters totally went away, I feel like it'd be devastating, but like, it makes me think of like a restaurant or something that you don't go to, but you just like knowing it's there. And then if it closes, you're really sad. Like, I saw 2001 Space Odyssey in a movie theater, and it was a totally different experience than watching it at home. And same with like Pulp Fiction, I watched like recently in a theater. And like, but those are so few and far between. And when you think of the types of movies that come out, I know there's those Marvel movies that are big spectacles and everything, but like anything else, like a dialogue-based indie movie or like a comedy, you know, something like Game Night, something like that, that came out and a bunch of my friends were recommending it. And I'm like, it's probably really good, but like, I'm not going to lose anything by watching this movie at home. Like, there's no need to spend $24 to see, you know, the movie Tag in a theater. Like, seriously, like, I'm not even ripping on the movie, like the type of movie that it is. You can watch at home and get the entire experience. And I feel like that's probably the majority of movies are that way. And so those other things are like the exception. I want to stand up and be like, no, but here I am just streaming shit in my headphones, so I can't talk.
Here's a compromise. What if we make movie theaters like church or the NFL, where it's socially acceptable to fuck with that like 2 or 3 days a week? You can go to the movies on Sunday, Wednesday night, and Friday night. Otherwise, just shut them down. Then I feel like we would value the experience a little bit more.
What are the buildings the rest of the time?
It's like a temporary hospital beds.
Yeah, triage hospitals. Yeah. Like
intensive care like units.
Everybody out. It's Wednesday night. We're showing Tag. He's pushing people, rolling people on like dialysis out in the streets so he can watch a movie for 2 hours, and then they wheel him back in.
Alamo Draft CU.
There's an Alamo Draft House opened up in downtown LA, and a friend of mine works there, and I haven't been, and it's been open for like 9 months.
Yeah, everyone who mentions Alamo Draft House to me, the first thing they say is, well, parking is tough, and I'm immediately like, I'm out. That's all I need to hear. That's a $35 Uber ride from where I'm at. No, thank you.
You know where parking is easy? My fucking bed. Right.
Not only are we being sensible by not going to the theater, but we are also environmental heroes, because Adam, you picked out a bunch of like great sources for it being relatively environmentally positive, even to do the streaming at home that like demands a lot of electricity and server energy and stuff. I got a Slate article here that says driving just 5 miles to a theater emits 4.6 pounds of carbon dioxide, and that's more than 9 times as much CO2 as it takes to run a home theater to watch a movie. Also, a Popular Science article that describes streaming a movie or receiving a DVD in the mail costs about 7.8 megajoules of energy, but driving to get a DVD from a Blockbuster costs 12 megajoules, mainly because you drove a car and spent a bunch of gas and stuff. And so that'd be similar with going to the movie theater. Like, just running your car to do anything, huge environmental difference.
Yeah, I think I read the only time seeing a movie at a theater is more environmentally sound is if the theater is mostly full. Then maybe maybe limiting it to a few days a week would kind of mitigate some of that environmental impact of movie theaters, because then those theaters would mostly be full if there were fewer showings. Like when the last Star Wars movie came out, there was a fucking 2:45 a.m. showing. Why? Why? That is insane. Like, there's no way that theater is going to be full. Like, if that was a flight, it would probably be canceled. But the movie theater stays open and runs the movie again, and it's a nightmare. So, yeah, maybe just less movies.
Don't you love when, like, the moral thing to do just happens to overlap with how you were already doing stuff? Where it's like, yeah, the lazy ass way you're watching movies now is actually good for the environment. You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad I care about that.
I knew that.
We've got another thing here, and this is another thing that we're all sort of automatically doing, but it makes sense, is Dan, you picked out just that basic practice of driving to a job in an office 5 days a week that so many people did and are now taking a break from. And it's, among other things, hugely environmentally beneficial. Like, it's just positive.
Yeah, I currently work for a company that's internet-based. I used to work for Cracked, which was entirely internet-based. I didn't travel anywhere, even though we had an office in Santa Monica, which is like an hour and a half drive away, but they didn't make me come in, which was nice. Yeah, I work for an internet company now. Before the pandemic, I drove to work every single day. I think it was only a 7 or 8 mile drive, but it took me like 30, 40 minutes, something like that. Drove in a car by myself because no one is around me to carpool with. There is mass transit in LA, but it would probably take me an hour and a half to 2 hours versus 35 minutes. So I don't really do it. 5 days a week each way to work on the internet and talk to people on Slack and stuff like that. And now we've seamlessly transitioned to doing pretty much everything from home, and it's 99% the same. And even though I like the experience of going into the office and seeing people, and it's like it's definitely different working from home in small ways, could we at least work from home 1 day a week at every company? Like, would anything be different? Not counting, retail or physical transaction type stuff. Like, what environmental impact would that make if we just like, we're like, okay, Wednesday or Friday, everyone in the country or, you know, 60% of jobs doesn't have a million people on the streets. Like, that would be like the easiest change, it seems like, without losing any productivity and having huge environmental impact.
Yeah, 100%. I always loved that dynamic it cracked, where there would be some people who, if they weren't going to be in the office, they would email everyone and let them know. And meanwhile, I would fire off an email at the beginning of March and be like, see you on the 26th for that meeting. I'll be working from here meanwhile. And no one gave a shit, because it's not the kind of job that I really had to be there for. I was running my own little corner of the site. We weren't making videos. We didn't need to fucking talk. I didn't need to see anyone's faces. And I've never understood the resistance to that kind of thing. It has to come down to mostly control. And, well, if I can't see the person, how do I know they're working? Well, technology, fuckstick. There are so many ways to track a person's productivity, no matter where they are. And you just install a fucking app on their computer that tracks what they're doing while they're on their computer. Is that some Big Brother shit? Sure it is, but they want to work from home, so they have to fucking deal with it. Like, it's really not that hard to accomplish. And even in the face of a pandemic, people were still like, nope, if you're feeling sick, don't come in. And it's like, if you're feeling sick, it's too late, because people are spreading it without being symptomatic.
And also, when you're in the office, it's not like the boss is monitoring your second-by-second productivity any more than they would be at home. You know, someone could sit in an office and be at their desk and whatever and not be productive, like, just as easily as they can from home. It's still like an honor system thing that you would only notice if their productivity's dropped in a long-term way anyway. It is very much like a culture prestige type thing. I think it's like, even when companies are like, yeah, you can work from home if you want, I think people still think there's like a little bit of pressure to come in, and like, the people who come in care a little bit more and they're more visible and the boss sees them. And then you're renting office space, which is really expensive. And, you know, parking, again, there's like a parking garage and company pays for parking, and it's so much, and there's staff to park people. It's like, we would all be a little happier if we at least remove that stigma a little bit.
And that office space thing is also part of the environmental impact too, because we obviously don't have an estimate of just the whole world working from home or working from home one day a week. But in a piecemeal way, there was a thing where the state government of Utah encouraged a bunch of people to do a 4-day work week where they just don't work the fifth day. Instead of, like, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you do 10 hours a day, 4 days a week, and it's the same. And they found in an interim report, which we'll have linked from Scientific American, Utah state government found that it would be a projected drop of at least 6,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions annually if they just didn't have office buildings open on Fridays. Like, that's the only change you needed to do. And if they included reductions in greenhouse gases from driving, that'd be at least 12,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide, which is the equivalent of 2,300 cars not driving at all for the entire year, which is amazing. Like, that's all you need to do, just shut down a little bit of the driving and the office AC. And it's really good for the environment, and people probably feel better too.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where it's going to be a thing the government is almost going to have to mandate. And I know people hate to hear shit like that, but sometimes the government does have to take action on behalf of the people and the planet.
Yeah.
At some point, we're just going to have to shut some of that shit down. Like, the environmental impact is so extreme, and it's such an easy fix. Just let people work from home.
I don't think any company's productivity would change at all. I feel like you'd probably work 4 days a week and be almost as productive. But if we have to do the 40-hour thing, then at least let one floating work from home day or something like that.
Yeah, because also, whether it's from home or not working at all, I guess no one studied it with America, but the University of Reading in the UK, last year they did a study and found that if the UK adopted a national 4-day working week and eliminated that day of people commuting, it would reduce the number of miles driven by employees traveling to work by 558 million miles per week. which is just an insane amount of carbon emissions that I don't even know how to measure. Like, it would be such a massive change for the better, for the environment.
Yeah, that's insane.
It frees up office buildings for another temporary hospital.
Yeah!
That doesn't so have to be the goal.
Hospital patients can be in downtown offices Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then wheel them to the movie theater on Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know. This will create jobs, people to wheel them around.
There's an idea, rolling quarantines, where you're quarantined at your office one day with all your fellow sick coworkers, and then you get quarantined at a movie theater for a night to hang out, and then that would be great.
And an NBA game with all 10 players are sick. It's fine.
We got a little more time here, and this is a practice that is weirdly still in place if you were in Wisconsin this week. But this past week on Tuesday, they went ahead and held a Wisconsin primary and made people go and vote in person. And the Supreme Court of the U.S. and bodies in Wisconsin all forced people to do it. But in general, it seems like with this coming election, we might move away at least a little bit from the practice of voting in person. And I think that would be fine. We can do all this stuff by the mail. It's very simple. And it's about as easy to secure as doing it in person. Like, why not?
Yeah, I always have wondered what the process for securing mail-in ballots is.
It seems like it's just about the same. Like, all the ballots go into a box, and then we're trusting people to count them properly.
They should televise that part. We should all get to watch. Like, just put it on C-SPAN or something.
Yeah, they could do that.
I do support this idea to some extent, but there's one issue that I see with it, which is, where would we get our sticker to take a selfie with and post it on social media? Is it the same if you just vote by mail? Because I don't want to rob people of that moment when they vote. Like, that's why we vote, so we can get the fucking sticker.
Well, you get a ballot in the mail, they mail the sticker to you, but you could put the sticker on without turning your ballot in.
See?
So what does the sticker even mean at this point?
Yeah.
We're just... If it's all mail-in, it's just, we're just completely devaluing it.
Yeah, we should obviously be voting by mail, as long as it's a thing that can be secured.
Yeah,
I resisted it for a while just because I was like, you know, I love the volunteers and it's this local thing and it feels like you're voting when you, I understand that, like when you click the thing, it feels like you're voting, but then I switched to mail-in ballot and I'm like, oh God, everyone should do this all the time.
Yeah.
It's just easy and painless and... I think also maybe you feel like if you mail it in, you don't get like counted as immediately. So like when they're doing the like daily updates, it's all the like in person and you're like, oh, I want to be a part of that cool percentage that I'm seeing on TV.
Here's how we fix that. We vote by text during each debate and do it just like fucking American Idol.
Like American Idol, good. Yeah.
You can vote up to 10 times for the candidate of your choosing. Fucking hack it if you want. We'll all just have competing factions of hackers working on our behalf, and whoever builds the best team is probably going to win.
They get like an exclusive deal with T-Mobile, and only people with T-Mobile can vote in every election. We're like, oh shit.
Use your iPhone 11 to vote now. No! I have an Android! Fuck! It doesn't feel like democracy at all.
They have it for Android, but it's really fucked up. It votes for the wrong guy. You're like, damn it. I feel like the anti-vote by mail is such a perfect chance for everyone to just lay their made-up reasons for why not to do it. People will be like, oh, you know, people can cheat by the mail or they're mail fraud or whatever or something. It's like really the ironclad process of like punching a paper thing in like a school gym for like a 95-year-old volunteer is like infallible. I mean, it's just clearly people who want to suppress voting saying it, but...
Yeah, I think the more futuristic and technology-related we try to make it, the less secure it becomes.
There's two general American beliefs about the voting system that maybe we happen to start to move past this time around, and one of them is that somehow the mail-in ballots are not as valid or like the fact that they get counted after means they're not even a thing. Like, we'll link to some stuff about a conservative meme that's been going around the last few years about California elections specifically, because so many of the ballots are mailed in, so then they get counted later than the voting in person, and it's a significant enough difference that it sort of moves the election result. And that has created a conservative meme on the internet that California elections get rigged after the fact when they're like just counting the mailed ballots and that's all that's happening.
Yeah.
And then the other belief we need to get past is that voting in person is like somehow better. It's actually the way that most jurisdictions that want to rig an election rig their election. They just make it harder for you to get to a polling place and make you stand in line for many hours for no reason. It's like the main form of voter suppression in the U.S.
During this Wisconsin primary that just happened, there were 5 polling places in Milwaukee, which is by far the most populous city in Wisconsin. I mean, Madison is close, yeah, but Milwaukee, there's like 600,000 people. 5 polling places. That's 30,000 people per polling place that have to get through that fucking line in one day.
Doesn't seem like a problem to me as long as they just pack everyone in there real tight, you know, just like shoulder to shoulder, get in there as close as you can, you know, make that line really, really tight and pack that room.
Cast your vote by sneeze.
And you're absolutely right, Adam, about Milwaukee being a great example of that being done. And then if people have heard of Shelby County versus Holder, the 2013 Supreme Court decision that said that we don't need the Voting Rights Act so much anymore, that cleared the way for a bunch of voter suppression throughout the American South targeted at black voters. And it's because the thing they do is just decrease the amount of polling places and workers in all the places that Republicans want to keep people from voting. And maybe voting by mail can also be hacked or rigged in some way that I haven't thought of, but it seems like the way around it, if we make that normal and everywhere, and also make it a thing where you just get mailed a ballot instead of showing up to the polling place and finding out you've been purged from the rolls. Like, so many fixes. Let's do it.
And Trump literally said, like, 2 days ago, something like, there's some of these counties, if everyone voted, if everyone was able to vote, like, Republicans would never win. And everyone's like, you're not supposed to actually say that part, but...
Maybe to kind of round things off, because we're reaching that point. Obviously, this is a crisis that we hope everyone is doing okay with, and we've said that before in the show, too. It seems like within it, there are these things that we described today that are things that can be thought about in a different light because pressure has been put on them in a way that makes it clear that they don't work, and it's not a thing we should do.
Yeah, that's the thing about this pandemic in general. Like, it's really laying bare what our world leaders are capable of, be it in their response to handling a crisis or just what kind of malignant evil they're capable of. Like Trump tried to suspend habeas corpus in the middle of this. Like, that's huge. Like, that's a step toward martial law, basically, in his response to this and in, you know, ignoring it at first. And now all of this revisionist history with, oh, well, China didn't tell us. It's like, China told me, like, I knew. Like, how did you not know? And it's really exposing a lot of bad that needed to be exposed. I still could do without it, but...
Yes.
You know, it's still a side effect.
Harsh words from Adam. This virus can take a freaking hike. We're like, whoa, we can't put that on the air.
Just malarkey.
Folks, that is the episode for this week. My thanks to Adam Todd Brown and to Dan Hopper. You know, I got to guest on one of Adam's shows last week, and we had a great time. We'll link it so you can listen to it. While we were on air, I realized I am kind of reappreciating podcasting as a way to talk to my favorite people for an extended period of time, right? I'm rediscovering that that's like one of the great things about it. I don't think I forgot ever. It's just really puts it into focus, this kind of situation. And so I'm so grateful to Adam and to Dan for making that possible, and grateful to you for joining us. We're lucky you came and hung out. If you would like to hang out in an internet-continued way, check out our food notes, where you will find a slew of sources we drew on to build this episode's facts and statistics. I particularly recommend links from Scientific American and from another site called The Conversation, where they look at just the overall environmental impact of having one less day per week where people commute to work. I think a lot of us are cooped up right now. Also, if you are not able to be cooped up right now, hang in there rooting for you. I know not everybody has that privilege. But if you are cooped up right now, maybe it is nice to think about the positive environmental impact of you not driving so much. Like that is a tangible positive thing that's happening for crazy and very upsetting reasons, but it is a good thing out there, and maybe that's one thing you can kind of hang your mental hat on. That's there, and so many other footnotes as well. You can also find Adam Todd Brown's podcasts at unpops.com or through the link, and you can see some comedy writing of Dan Hopper's that I picked out. He has a ton of great New Yorker pieces, among many other things, and so there's a fun one right in there for you. Enjoy. And beyond all that, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the Budos Band. This episode was engineered by me in Durham, North Carolina, by Adam Todd Brown in California, and by Dan Hopper in a separate place in California. Then, check it out, it was edited by Chris Souza in a fourth location. The internet is magic, people. Love it. And if you loved this episode, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. A space where my buddy Logan Trent alerted me to a virtual museum exhibit that I spent part of the weekend. And it was at the Charles Schulz Museum in Santa Rosa, California. That's way north in California in a place I've never been. So I've never been there before. But I went there virtually because they have a little upload of some special Peanuts stuff and like some weird Charlie Brown toys that were weird in a great way. I had a great time of it. We'll link that too. You know, we'll fill up the footnotes. That's what they're there for. And if you'd like more Snoopy content beyond that, I recommend you visit my Twitter account. It is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitstagram. And I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. And I'm here to say we will be back next week with more Cracked Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.